Welcome to Toy Fix. I'm Andy.
I'm Wes.
And we're here to talk about X-Men toys from the 90s, like we always do.
And it's episode 12. We're excited to be looking at series 5.
We're going to be looking at the heroes today. And before we get started, maybe we should talk a little bit about context, kind of.
I think things in context is our favorite thing to do here.
It really is. But so the exciting thing about series 5 is that this was the first year in which two waves were released in the same year. So this came out in 1993 as well. That, I think, represents the increasing popularity of the X-Men toys, that they felt like they could, you know, sell two waves of toys in a single year.
I actually think we have Series 3. It's coming out in 93. So we had three waves in 93.
Wait, is Series 3 the, like, repaint wave?
Yes, with Wolverine.
I never want to count that wave, but I guess that... Okay, well, two waves of new figures came out in 1993.
Fair point.
And then they also did some repaints. If you want to hear more about what was going on in the comic books in 1993, you can just go back a couple of episodes, and we discussed that, you know, I think in a fair amount of depth several episodes ago.
Yeah, it's been pretty consistent. We took a break for X-Force, of course, but yeah, all the stuff is the same. Because there were so many waves this year, this probably would have been coming out in time for the holidays, so it makes sense that they would go for very recognizable characters from the animated series.
Exactly, and that's what we get.
Especially with the first character,
Cyclops second edition.
Surrender, mutant.
Of course. Not.
The man called Cyclops possesses the uncanny mutant ability to fire beams of devastating energy from his eyes. These optic blasts are so powerful that they can only be effectively harnessed by a special ruby quartz visor designed by Professor X. Over the years, Cyclops has grown from a sullen, withdrawn loner into the cool, confident, capable leader of the X-Men's Blue Strike Force.
Oh, wow. So we get a name drop for the Blue Strike Force, just like we got the Gold Strike Force, I think, with Bishop, right?
Yes, correct.
Yeah, so they're really expecting that the kids who are buying these toys are following the comics. And in the world of comics right now, the X-Men have two teams, the Blue Team and the Gold Team.
Blue Team is, of course, Jim Lee's flagship team, and Cyclops is the cool, confident, capable leader in charge of it.
He sure is. When you picture Cyclops in your mind, you probably picture Cyclops in this costume. This is the Jim Lee designed Cyclops costume that first debuted in X-Men Volume 2, Number 1 in 1991. He's wearing a blue jumpsuit and has yellow boots and gloves and this weird harness thing that's got lots of pouches on it.
He's got five belts on, basically. He's got a belt for each leg and three belts for his torso.
Yeah, he sure does. He also is letting his hair, you know, fly freely. He doesn't have the skull cap that is, you know, very common in Cyclops costumes. This is also the costume that he appeared in the animated series. And in the comic, he actually wore this costume from its debut in 1991 all the way through to his apparent death during the 12 storyline in the year 2000. So this Cyclops costume had a very good run. And then it actually was briefly revived a couple of years ago during, I think it's Matt Rosenberg's run on Uncanny X-Men, just prior to House of X, Powers of 10. It was a terrible run, in my humble opinion. But it was cool to see Cyclops back in this costume.
Yeah, it's just standard look. It's the one I'm nostalgic for most often.
So looking at this card, what's interesting to me is that I called this figure Cyclops second edition, but it's actually not branded as such. It's just branded as Cyclops.
They'd rather ignore the sullen, withdrawn loner with the skull cap from wave one.
Yeah, I feel like this is part of an ongoing effort of the Toy Biz X-Men line to, you know, rewrite the history of the line and to sort of hand wave away some of the earlier figures that just didn't actually line up with the aesthetic that the line at this point has developed into. I think that's really notable if you look at the silhouette of this Cyclops versus the original Cyclops toy. What would be different about those two silhouettes, Wes?
My Cyclops is going to be the first one from Wave 1, and he's trim. He's approachable. He looks like a normal guy who might have put on a costume in order to cosplay as Cyclops.
Exactly. So in the comics, Cyclops has the nickname Slim. You would wonder why anyone would ever call this toy Slim because he is very muscly. We've talked in the last couple of episodes about how the aesthetic of the line had changed and the figures had shifted to being kind of like bulkier and more muscly and kind of like more 90s-ish. And this toy definitely fits that. This is a Cyclops who could totally kick some ass.
He has been hitting the whey protein and Xavier School gym every day for probably an hour and a half a day.
Yeah, he sure has. And he brings his gym clothes with him in his backpack, which this figure is also packaged with.
It's a cool backpack because it's got yellow accents that I think can go up and down.
They do. And then he has like a little sort of like almost like a dowsing rod that he can hold in one hand.
It's one of those things you might use to fill patches in the walls, like if you need to spackle.
It also is kind of like a temperature gun that you could use in 2020 before allowing someone to enter a grocery store or other business.
With evil basically vanquished in the past couple of months here, that actually is probably the best use of Scott Summers nowadays.
Yeah, it sure is. So I had this toy and I was super excited about it because this is my Cyclops. Like this costume is my Cyclops. I was a fan of the sort of like more muscly action figures. So I was excited to see Cyclops get this this glow up, so to speak. His action feature is, again, his visor lights up through a switch on the back. What's cool about this toy is that there's actually a little panel on the back that you can unscrew to change the battery. Whereas with the older Cyclops toy, once that battery went dead, that was it.
You can still use this one to
find the keyhole if you're unlocking your car in the dark parking lot.
And you just happen to have this action figure in your pocket.
Yeah. Yeah.
I usually carry around my Archangel action figure, but Cyclops is a little more practical.
I really do like the art on the card back for this toy. And I love that they have included the backpack on it. It's a real commitment to their vision of Cyclops.
I did think this one's head was a mite tiny for his body type.
Yeah, I can see that. She sort of had a weird face too. This costume for Cyclops has the classic underwear on top of the tights superhero look. And you can see that they just decided not to paint the like sides of the underwear on the tops of his legs. Like you can see there's a line where like it should have been yellow and it wasn't. They just...
Yeah, they molded the toy's legs that way, but they didn't bother to paint that portion of it. I feel like they did that with a lot of toys back then.
Yeah, well, I know like the Ninja Turtles toys often had details molded into it that were not painted. And that was just sort of like a feature of the toys. With this, feels a little lazy to me, but that's okay. Anything else you want to say about this version of Cyclops?
No, I mean, we've talked pretty extensively about Scott's background and the role he was playing.
I will say one thing that's interesting. They talk about on the back about him becoming a cool, confident, capable leader. In the period of X-Men comics that began with X-Men Volume 2, Number 1, that's actually when Cyclops went from being a cool, confident, capable leader to being a like killjoy, wet blanket nerd. You know, prior to that, Cyclops was a badass. When Jim Lee started writing the book, right from that first issue, they make him kind of uptight and Boy Scouty. Of course, that characterization carried through to the TV show and the movies, and now that's who everyone thinks Cyclops always was, but it's not true.
Old stick in the mud, Summers.
Yeah, I got a lot of flack from my friends in the 90s because I was a Cyclops fan and no one else was. Teased by other nerds, that was my childhood.
So we know where you were on the pecking order.
Exactly. So I think that they actually showed pictures in Wizard of this wave of toys before they came out. So for the first time, I knew they were coming as opposed to just like going to the toy store one day and like seeing them there.
I wonder how Wizard landed that exclusive.
Well, I think they went to Toy Fair.
No, I'm joking. Like, you know, it could have been in Time or something.
Oh, right.
Newsweek.
Yeah, Newsweek. Well, the X-Men toys wouldn't raise to that level of popularity until at least 1994.
Now it's time to talk about a character who will be new to us. Are you ready for Longshot?
Hey, watch out!
Hello, sweetheart. I don't believe we've been introduced.
Once a slave to the extra-dimensional tyrant Mojo, Longshot eventually escaped, came to Earth, and joined forces with the X-Men. Armed with razor-sharp throwing knives, his combined abilities of amazing agility and incredible luck allow him to take on the fiercest foes. Recently, Longshot left the X-Men to search for the secrets of his past and travel to parts unknown. I have to hand it to a card back that is not afraid to write its character out of the story.
Well, at least acknowledges where he's actually at in 93. He's an interesting character considering where he debuted. Longshot had his own miniseries, and that's where he started, right?
He did. He was created by Ann Nesenti and Art Adams, and he first appeared in Longshot number one in 1985. That was a 6-issue miniseries, I believe.
And, which is crazy. Can you imagine nowadays them launching a new character with his or her own miniseries?
Yeah, I really can't. I mean, the only instance in which that might happen today is if they were a legacy character, you know, like a new... like a new Ms. Marvel or a new Nova, like, or
this is the new version of Iron Man or something.
Exactly. But no, this was when Longshot number one came out, he was a new character. He was actually like in a new universe that we had never seen before. The Mojoverse. The
Sounds Mojoverse. Entertaining.
Yeah, it is. So I guess we have to talk about what the Mojoverse is, don't we?
Yeah, we should. It's basically like reality television in 99 to present.
Yeah, exactly. But this was created in the 80s, so in some ways it was prescient.
Exactly. I think the Mark Burnett television universe was really based on Mojo.
So I don't know who Mark Burnett is.
He's the guy who created Survivor and The Apprentice, leading to the alternate timeline we currently have been living in the past 4 years.
Yes, the alternate 1985 that we're still in. And similarly, the Mojoverse is a terrible place. It's ruled by this, you know, really grotesque character, Mojo, who is, I guess he's like, in his appearances, he's always worried about ratings. And like, it's never been clear to me who watches, if Mojo TV is viewable from outside of the Mojoverse, because it seems like in the Mojoverse, everybody is a part of the television program, but maybe I'm wrong about that.
Well, in the current X Factor series, you see that Aurora is able to tune in to Mojo television from Krakoa.
That is true, but I wonder if that's, you know, like if that's some Krakoan plant magic that's letting her do that, or if anybody in the Marvel Universe can just turn on Mojo TV.
Plus, I'm disappointed with her viewing options that she would choose to support such programming.
I know. Aurora makes bad choices, unfortunately, as part of her character on an ongoing basis. So Longshot debuted in this miniseries. I'll be honest, I tried to read it at one point on Marvel Unlimited, and I couldn't get into it. But I do like him a lot as a character when he shows up in the X-Men. So he joined the X-Men in Uncanny X-Men Annual number 10 in 1986, and he was only a member of the team for 3 years. He joined right after the Mutant Massacre and then stayed through the Outback era. And he was written out in Uncanny X-Men number 248 in 1989, which was, you know, at the time that they, Claremont was like sort of disbanding the team and had a bunch of them go through the Siege Perilous and kind of, you know, did something like really different with the storyline.
And they decided that getting rid of Longshot was actually, and keeping Forge was actually the safest call for numbers.
Yeah, they were like, Forge will be our new flagship character. This character has never been an X-Man. So I guess like Longshot is technically supposed to be a mutant. So that like is why it's okay for him to be a member of the X-Men. But
I thought he was an alien.
Yeah, I mean, he's an artificial life form, and he was created from the genetic material of Shatterstar.
His child?
His child, yes. It's a stable time loop. Try not to look too closely at this. Yeah, so he was an artificial life form, and I guess he was like a star in the Mojoverse. He has a bunch of superpowers. His most notable power is his incredible luck, which I think only works if he's using it for altruistic reasons. I don't think he can like use it to like win the lottery for himself.
What a bummer.
I know. He also has hollow bones like a bird, and he's very agile. He only has 3 fingers and a thumb on each hand. And he has psychometry, which is the power to touch an object and to like know its history.
No, I thought psychometry was what I had been diagnosed with, but I it's not that.
So yeah, he used that power to great effect in this classic 1980s storyline where the X-Men have taken over this base where there's a bunch of like stolen treasure, and they use Longshot's power and Gateway's teleporting ability to return all of the like objects to the rightful owners. And you know what night of the year they choose to do that on? They do it on Christmas Eve. You could say that the X-Men played the role of Santa Claus that year.
You could say that. I love that they would help him out with such an important mission.
in the story, they don't realize that it was Christmas Eve until the end of it, like as if like somehow they missed that.
When you're a superhero, the hours are constant. I understand that you lose track of weekends, months, and time in general.
So I think that Longshot has a really cool design. When he was a member of the X-Men during the 80s, he never really got like a spotlight moment. He didn't get much character development. Claremont wrote him out very quickly. Like in the issue where he leaves, he doesn't even the story of him leaving isn't even the main storyline of that issue. Like it's just like in the first couple of pages, they're just like, oh, like Longshot's going to go find himself.
I hear your criticism about him not getting many character moments, but his character design, including that hair, is enough of a character moment.
Well, how would you describe his hair?
An 80s mullet? Really,
it sure is. Yeah, it's definitely a mullet.
Like my favorite Banshee, he's got the open collar with sort of the open wide look and sort of skin tight black gear.
Yeah, he does. And in the for the action figure, they've decided to make his belt and his boots this sort of like dark turquoise color, which I assume they just did for contrast. In the comics, that he was always in all black, but I think it looks good on the toy.
Yeah, and he also has that star symbol in the upper right hand corner of his chest area, which is the same as Shatterstar, correct? Or sort of the opposite colors.
I think it's the same as Shatterstar. That also, at one point during the Outback era of the X-Men comics, they talked about using this symbol as a calling card for the X-Men, because this was during a time when the X-Men were believed to be dead. And so I guess the idea was that they would like leave the symbol behind whenever they had done some heroic acts. But then Claremont took the storyline in a totally different direction, and then that was never really talked about again.
Everyone's like, Santa, why did he leave these stars on all of the gifts he left us randomly this one year?
I know. Longshot is also supposed to be like very, very attractive, like almost irresistible to women.
Is that how you find this action figure to be?
Well, I'm not a woman. So the other thing about Longshot, I feel like we've like talked a lot about a character who doesn't have there's not much to say about. So he was written out in 89, and then in 92, after Jim Lee took over and they launched Volume 2, he does show up again. He showed up in X-Men Volume 2, number 10 in 92 for this really weird little story where he's basically like back to his original status quo. He's in the Mojoverse. He's fighting for the freedom of the Mojoverse. Mojo somehow captures the X-Men Blue Team and makes them believe they're in the Wizard of Oz. Like that's actually the storyline.
Well, that's sort of funny because the storyline you described with all of the old items and figuring out where they're from reminded me a little bit of the plot of the movie Return to Oz.
Oh,
also from the 80s.
That's like the scary one, right?
Mm-hmm.
I have never seen it.
It's good.
So Longshot also frequently gets his mind erased. So that also impedes his character development because oftentimes when he is like reunited with the X-Men, he has to be reminded of who they are. So I had this toy, of course. For some reason, I thought Longshot was like a really cool character. I know that my brother had bought a couple of packs of the first series of Marvel trading cards. And one of those was Longshot's trading card back when he was an X-Man. Reading that trading card made me think that he was a very important character, which was false. I was excited that when he finally got an action figure here in Series 5.
Been waiting so long. Who cares about Beast? Who cares about any of those other mainline X-Men characters?
We've talked about this. Some of the toys, I got them because I was a bit of a completist. And I was like, oh, well, here's another evil mutant. But with Longshot, I was like, yes, finally Longshot. I can't wait.
Yeah, I didn't have this one. I didn't feel that way. But I'm so happy he brought you joy.
What should we say about the figure?
What exactly is going on with his action feature?
Yes, he throws knives in the comics and he had you could sort of like pull his hand back and then let it go. And the idea was that he would throw the knife, like the little plastic knives.
That's cool.
It kind of worked if I remember correctly. I don't know. It seems like the kind of action feature they would never put on a toy today. Like knife throwing action seems like it's a quick way to being banned in like 30 of the 50 states.
But in the other 20, they'll fight to the death for your right to have knife throwing toys. So in 93, like you mentioned, he'd sort of been written out of the comics but in 89, right? Basically, other than that brief appearance in X-Men Volume 2.
Yes. And before the main storyline where he shows up, they had a couple of teases that he was coming back. He also got a trading card in the original X-Men trading card line. So it seems like maybe Jim Lee was planning to do something more with him, but we'll never know. Of course, Jim Lee then left, I think right after that storyline. Longshot was sent back to obscurity. I don't think he ever, you know, really showed up in a meaningful way again until X-Factor Investigations in like 2007 or 8 or something like that.
I just think it's still an interesting choice that 4 years later they would decide to stick him in this line.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's really because they were basing their choices really closely on specifically X-Men Volume 2. You know, we've talked about this with like Omega Red, with like Wolverine's stealth suit. I mean, Strong Guy, not so much. It seems like that, you know, like Jim Lee was the hot X-Men artist. And I guess they were like, whatever Jim Lee does, we're going to turn it into a toy. Looking at this figure, I'm reminded of something. Wes, maybe at the end of this episode, should we talk about the documentary?
Yes.
That we watched recently?
So good.
And we can come back to it then, because I'm reminded of something that came up in that when I look at the silhouette of Longshot.
I mean, the figure looks good, but it doesn't look like Longshot in my mind either, because Longshot's a little slimmer than this, typically.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely, like, they've just decided they're going to make all of the heroes, all the characters muscly. At least they gave him the mullet. Sadly, he can't swivel his head because of it. I don't think I have anything else to say about Longshot.
Yeah, me neither. He's not really my favorite character.
Oh, I guess, I mean, he did show up in the animated series in season 2 also. I mean, he was an ally of the X-Men, kind of, but it seemed like he was more jealous of the X-Men and how they were getting more attention from Mojo. So I would say he didn't seem super heroic in his first appearance in the cartoon.
Well, that's reasonable. They were sort of peaking right then. But as we mentioned, you know, all these action figures were really muscly, you know, depicted much stronger than they were typically in the comics. But our third character, they stayed pretty true to life on his design.
They sure did.
And we're talking about Professor Charles Xavier.
I'd like you to meet Sean Cassidy, my fiancé.
Moira's told me a great deal about you, Mr. Xavier.
How fortunate. Now, if you'll show me my quarters, Moira, I need to rest.
Oh my gosh, I love this image.
The most powerful mutant telepath on Earth, Professor X traveled the world researching the effects of genetic mutation, realizing that mutants, people born with, quote, extra powers and abilities beyond those of ordinary humans, were increasing in number. He founded the X-Men to train young mutants to use their powers for the good of both human and mutant kind. Through the years, Professor X has held true to this idealistic dream, working towards a future in which all people can live together in peace.
So we've been talking about Professor X since the first episode of the show, but now he finally has his own action figure.
I was so excited when this one came out. This was an instant buy for me.
I was super excited too. And I think it's a really, really good figure. But should we talk a little bit about who Professor X is before we get into the figure?
We should, but just a quick aside, I'm disappointed if you've made it to episode 12 and you guys haven't picked up on Professor X. But now's a good time to revisit.
That's true. I feel like now we can like sort of talk a little bit about how Professor X's story is a little bit more complicated than you might have realized.
Correct.
So he first showed up, he was first appeared in the first issue of Uncanny X-Men in 1963. He was co-created by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. He is the founder of the X-Men, obviously. The character who had the original dream of humans and mutants living together peacefully. He was really not prominent in the comics for a long period before the 91 relaunch. In Uncanny X-Men 200, he was having some health problems related to his cloned body, which we're not going to get into, I guess. And he went into space with Lilandra, who at the time was the heir to the throne of the Shi'ar Empire. But unfortunately, her sister Deathbird had seized the throne. So Lilandra and Xavier joined the Starjammers, and Xavier spent, you know, 75 issues, so however many years that is, as a member of the Starjammers, which is like a group of space pirates, which is like hilarious and insane, right?
I didn't even know that.
I mentioned briefly, at this time Xavier had a cloned body, and so he had the use of his legs again. And then in Uncanny X-Men 275, the X-Men went to the Shi'ar Empire and teamed up with the Starjammers and were reunited with Xavier. At that time, many of the X-Men then didn't even know him because he had not been a part of the team for so long that they'd never met. And then after that, he returned to Earth with the X-Men. And then during the Muir Island saga, I think in 1991 as well, which is also like, as an aside, a terrible story, he had, in a battle with the Shadow King, he was injured and lost the use of his legs again.
The worst luck.
Exactly. And so, and then between the Muir Island saga and X-Men Volume 2, Number 1, they rebuilt the X-Mansion because it had been destroyed like years ago. And this was a part of the effort at Marvel, you know, with Jim Lee in charge of this new X-Men book, of really resetting the X-Men to their classic Silver Age status quo, which they had not been operating in for many years. And so part of that was that they had to have Xavier back. They had to have him as the leader of the team, and he had to be in a wheelchair.
Which I'm not mad at. I love the idea of the world's most powerful telepath facing that type of challenge. And I think that's one of the really creative things that Stan Lee came up with in the 60s to make this character stand out from everyone else at the time.
Yeah, I agree. I think that it's sort of like an on-the-nose juxtaposition where he has like this super powerful mind, but also has this, like, you know, very real challenge in terms of limitations of his body. I also love that for the toy, they depicted him as he is in the comics. So in the 91 relaunch, that's when we first see Xavier in the gold hover chair, which was created using Shi'ar technology, which they recreated here for the toy. Toy executives thinking about selling toys, I could see them deciding to give a character like Xavier some sort of like exoskeleton suit so they can make him sort of like a more classic superhero in order to sell the toy. And I love that they didn't do that. Instead, they created a toy that looks just like the Xavier that we were reading about in the X-Men comics of the time, and also that looked like the Xavier that you would see on the animated series.
Yes, I don't, like, brave seems like the wrong thing to say there, but committed, just like they were at Toy Biz with designing costumes exactly like they saw in the comic books, they were really committed to bringing these characters into physical form. I remember when I selected this one, I remember my mom being, even though she watched the animated series with me, she was really surprised that I was choosing a toy of a 50-something-year-old bald man in a wheelchair to play with, and that's just how powerful these characters are.
I was so excited when this toy came out too. Like, it was also, of all the ones in the wave, it was the one that I was the most looking forward to. I had actually been using an old Lex Luthor toy with a yellow chair that I made out of Legos as a stand-in for Professor X. And because he's a central character to the storyline, you know, and off and on, there've been periods where they've like sort of moved Xavier to the background, or he was also dead briefly recently. I mean, I guess he was dead for like, you know, 5 years, but anyway, but they like sort of like they keep bringing him back, like, again, like right now in the House of X era, he is like once again like the central, one of the central figures, one of the most important characters in the story.
But nothing can take away this version of Xavier, because he's still idealistic in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing is that like over the years, they've basically turned Xavier into an out and out villain, and they've done that through, and interestingly, they didn't do that with the Onslaught storyline, where he actually like was briefly a villain. They did it through a series of retcons where it was explained that, you know, he had done like various nefarious things that we had never heard about, or, you know, the readers had not seen, which I think is too bad. I love the Xavier as he was depicted in the comics in the early to mid 90s. In the best storylines, he was a flawed character, like he was not perfect. And at times the X-Men challenged him and pointed out, you know, minor hypocrisies. But he also had a good heart, and he was like this paternal figure to the entire team. And that's not who he is anymore, I don't think, unfortunately.
No, he's definitely more of a politician who has to make choices based off of like the greater good, which is interesting to read about, especially in Ten of Swords. But
good catch. I know you wanted to call it X of Swords.
I always call it X of Swords in my mind.
Indeed. Hasbro has, you know, in the last couple of years made a version of, like, has made a toy of this version of Xavier. And I actually like the one from Toy Biz from 92 better. This is, in my mind, it's like the perfect, you know, distillation of this Charles Xavier in an action figure.
So the armrests on the chair, let's describe it really briefly. They flip up, right? And inside he's got two of those thermometers that Scott comes with that he could hold as a gun or something. And he's got like little computer screens printed on the inside. But I thought that was so neat, because a lot of times in the series, in the comics or on the show, they don't really show what's underneath the armrests.
Yeah, no, exactly. And like, again, they could have given him some goofy action feature, like have like a, you know, like a big like laser come out of the chair. And they didn't. They could have put him sometimes in, they do this in the cartoon as well. Sometimes when he's like in the field, he's wearing sort of like a, almost like a military fatigue, green jumpsuit, But again, like, and they could have done that to make him seem more action-oriented. But no, they, like, put him in a jacket and tie. I think it's just awesome because I could see how this was, like, this figure probably seemed like a risk to a lot of toy executives who are like, you know, what the heck? Like, this is not a superhero. And he's,
I mean, he has a plastic folded blanket on his lap.
But it's awesome because, like, this is Professor X. It's so great. I mean, I just think this is such a great toy. It looks so good. Like, the way the chair is molded looks so good.
And because he's in a vehicle that we know flies, like, you can fly it around the room, like, when you're playing. And that made it a lot of fun because I will say my Professor X definitely would catch a lot more air than he was normally depicted.
My Professor X was very fond of having, you know, battles in the center of the mind with Magneto, just like in the fourth episode of the animated series. I think the head sculpt is really good. Like, this, I can't say enough about how cool this toy is. And it's cool because they didn't set out to make a cool toy. They set out to make a faithful toy.
I love how you said that. And they actually would reuse this head sculpt later when they would make an astral plane version of Professor X, which I loved that they made that too.
Yeah, which is also awesome. And I can't wait until we get to talk about that one.
Not much else to say about Charles other than this is, to me, I agree with you. This is the quintessential Charles Xavier toy.
He was also a central character of the cartoon. And I think that's part of why they probably knew that they could, you know, make this toy and have it sell. He's not just, you know, sort of like the Charlie to the X-Men's Angels. Like, he is a main character in that show. Well, that's it for the series 5 heroes. Do we want to talk a little bit about the TV show that we watched in the last week or two?
Yeah, that Disney Plus episode. What was it called?
So the show is called 616. As any dedicated Marvel Universe fan knows, that in the Marvel multiverse, the main comic book universe continuity is Universe 616. And this was, like, I think it was episode, like, 5 of that.
Yes, and it's all about action figures.
Yeah, it's called, like, Unboxing the Marvel Universe or something like that.
It was so great because they had interviews with creators from Toy Biz, also from Hasbro, but I would definitely recommend everyone to watch it if they have access to Disney Plus. We don't get any money for recommending that. It's that good.
No, it's great. If you're a fan of these toys, then you should watch this show. It's really cool. You get to see a bit about how they make the Marvel Legends today. They also interviewed a bunch of people who were involved in the development of this line from Toy Biz from the 90s, including one of the designers, and she walks you through the process that she would take in designing an action figure and bringing a 2D character to life in 3D. And one of the things that she talks about is how there's, like, she calls it the Marvel stance. I don't think I noticed this until I saw the show. She talks about how they're all muscly, and they have this, like, sort of, like, wide stance that you can see in the Longshot toy in this line. You can see in the Cyclops toy in this line. It's neat. They're going for, like, a specific look. You know, it's interesting because I think it's connected to what you were talking about, Wes, in terms of the shift in the aesthetic of the line. But it seems like they were, like, sort of going for this as a way to depict the Marvel character. It was sort of like a house style for action figures.
Yeah, I think it sort of overlaps with, I don't know if you've ever seen that old, they have a paperback version of it. It's like How to Draw the Marvel Comics Universe. And they sort of talk about, like, the Marvel characters are, you know, 8 heads tall versus, like, 6 heads tall, like a normal person. And just all of those little decisions that go into it. And you sort of see that on the sketch that she's doing when she's talking to the interviewers, because they've got the dotted lines across the page.
Yeah, no, it's super cool. I think, yeah, and I know that the book that you're talking about, I remember reading it as a kid. It like warms my heart to sort of, like, you know, peel, like, sort of, like, pull back the curtain and see how some of this stuff was made.
And those are my movie stars. These people, like, it's really cool because I've never had a name to put with the people who worked on stuff like this.
I know, exactly. I hadn't either. Yeah, I mean, they made such cool stuff that brought me a lot of joy as a kid.
Highly recommend. If you needed to hear our endorsement, there you have it. Go see Unboxing the Marvel Universe.
I think that's it for this episode. I think we're going to wait till next episode to talk about Wishes, right?
Correct. But did you notice what this wave is missing?
I did not.
There's no Wolverine. How daring.
Wow, how experimental. I can't believe I didn't notice that.
We're going to call... this is a very avant-garde wave. It's really, you know... outside of itself, experimental, artsy-fartsy toy biz.
Very innovative, very cutting edge. They just took the rule book and they threw it right out. And they were like, no Wolverine, but instead Longshot and Professor X.
Hopefully they financially benefited from that, because this was fantastic.
I would say that all three of these figures are really, you know, excellent figures.
Yeah, that's pretty much it for the heroes on Wave 5. So until they re-release Charles Xavier and Cyclops with thermometers and face shields, make my toy fix.